I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
A Cherokee elder was teaching his young grandson about life. "A fight is going on inside me," he said to the boy. "It is a terrible fight, and it is between two wolves. One is evil. He is anger, envy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride, superiority, self-doubt, and ego. The other is good. He is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. The same fight is going on inside you and inside every other person too." The boy thought about this for a minute and then asked his grandfather, "Which wolf will win?" The elder simply replied, "The one you feed."
Hey up, witches and beautiful souls. Welcome back to the Bell Witch Podcast with me, Swales, a friendly green witch. You are listening to episode 27. Blimey, they're racking up now. And I think I'm going to have to go back to every 2 weeks just because it is really hard to keep up with it every week. The last one was a bit of a test to see if I were any good at doing weekly episodes, and it's eaten up so much of my week. It's just not really something I can do. I can dream maybe in the future when my little kids grow up, my little witchlings perhaps, but right now it's just not really doable, and that's all right. I do my best for you. Anyway, how do I sound? Do I sound clearer? A bit more crisper perhaps? At last, I own a Yeti microphone, my second attempt at buying a second-hand Yeti microphone. The first one got damaged in the post. This one, I practically begged the seller on Vinted to pack, you know, like in a box and stuff, to get here in one piece. And I think it has done that. So hopefully I sound nice and crisp. And yeah, I hope you're enjoying the sound. I do try my best for you. This episode is a really good one. I mean, I know I say that every episode, but this one is quite special because it's my friend Claire who has come on to talk to us about being mindful and how to apply that in your daily life, how to achieve being mindful and looking at small things, the 7 principles of mindfulness, and it's just packed to the brim of amazing little tips, and there's a little bit of a meditation at the end as well. In other news, the next issue of Pagans of the North is out around now. If you're a subscriber, you get it early. And yours truly has a Witching with Kids column in it, as I do every Sabbath. And it ties in quite nicely with Magic of the Sea episode. So do check that out if you can. It's completely free. It's a brilliant read. And every issue is also run by volunteers, written for by volunteers, and people who send amazing work in. And it's just really beautiful. Every single issue, I think, is just gloriously unique and an absolutely fantastic read by those who are really passionate about pagan lifestyle, witchcraft, and everyday magic. So yes, do check that out, won't you? If you're listening to this on the day that it comes out, which is the 20th of March, it will be my first ever friendly coven up at the Crystal Booth. Now, this has been on my mind for a good 9 months. I've wanted to hold a circle of some kind that is unique from other circles, so not so much a woman's circle or a mindfulness thing where you unload your past or what's on your mind. I didn't want to do that because I know I'm not trained high enough. I wanted to do something fun and magical, and every time I asked myself, it was a bit like, well, I want to create, and I'd quite like to do something about poetry, maybe a poetry circle. But then when I got right down to it, when I asked myself what I wanted, it kept coming back to magic, like I wanted more magic in my life. And so I decided to create a magical circle, like a proper old school, kind of like a coven. You can come when you can come, and I'm only going to charge a tenner a ticket, and it'll be in my local area at the Crystal Booth, which is Angela's shop up the road. The idea is I hold the space, and together the circle of people decide what we're going to do in it. So I quite like the idea of doing magic for each individual separately, you know, so we all benefit. I mean, magic is amazing, and I don't do enough of it in my life, I realise. Although everything is magic to me at the moment. I need to do more sophisticated magic, more intentional magic with other people. And every witch knows magic is a lot more powerful if you do it with a group of people with the same intention and the same respect. So this is very much trial and error for me. I am going to trust the universe. I'm not over planning. I've got a brief plan in my head that, you know, that I'm going to follow, a rough plan. But I'm mostly going to just trust the universe and see how it flows, because I want it to be really circle controlled. And this circle needs to be fluid in its direction. And I want it to be beneficial. So if you are local to me in the West Leeds area, and you know the Crystal Booth, pop me a DM and get a ticket. It'll be 7 till 9-ish every third Wednesday of the month. So I don't know how that corresponds with the moon, because I'm not much of a moon witch, as you know. But I do feel it's the correct way to go. And if it takes off, who knows what will come of it. It's so exciting. I'm just so inspired. And it's a really lovely place to be. It's so nice. I've got to point out, though, I am no expert. I am on par with all you listeners, learning what works and what doesn't, and just being more vocal about it, because I've got a podcast, basically. Please don't be thinking that I'm like a supersonic expert, because I am definitely not. Also, in other news for the West Yorkshire Witches, I just wanted to give Marlin Moot a shout out. So this moot is quite an old moot. It's been going for 20 odd years, I believe. It is quite long. The next one is on the 26th of March. Starts at 8 p.m. at Morley Working Men's Club on Foundation Street in Morley, LS 279EH. And this one is particularly of interest to me because, do you remember the amazing Anna Betts that came on quite a few episodes ago now? She was talking about the characteristics of planets in astrology, and she was so fabulous. She was so knowledgeable and really engaging and had tons of knowledge. And it just so happens this is still one of my most high ranking episodes. Out of all of them, it follows the pattern of being quite high up in listener downloads, because it was just that popular. So thank you, Anna. Anna's coming back on the podcast in a few months. I'm going to record very soon. But this particular Marlin Moot, Anna is going to give a presentation all about tarot and astrology and the circle of life. It's going to be so good. And if you're local to West Yorkshire, to Morley or Leeds, This is your sign to go over to Morley Moot. It'll be an absolute wonderful, wonderful experience, and you'll just learn so much. Go see what it's all about, witches. Alrighty then, what's next on the witchy agenda from Swales the Friendly Green Witch? Patreon is still going strong. I have a few members, which is enabling me to pay for my subscription from Zencaster. It's all I need, you know, just to pay for what I use for podcasting. Been planning, I've been scheming. I have been working on a mini show that I mentioned way back, all about the stuff I find on TikTok, you know, that just blows my mind, that makes me go like, what the TikTok? And that's what I'm going to call it. So this is just stuff, you know, a little bit of spirituality and conspiracy theories and stuff that just blows your mind, you know, that's not necessarily negative. That kind of goes like, ooh, you know, you can't forget it. I think it's quite a fun topic. Between editing, I'm going to just record every so often things that come across my path and then put together a few episodes. So I have done the first episode and it's waiting in the wings because I need a few more to release, and I'll put a few on Spotify for you. But yeah, I'm definitely need to add more to Patreon. I'm going to add some spells, some sigils, and then of course you get ad-free episodes and little bonus episodes between, and some write-ups, my column, you get early access to my column, and you get like a bit of a witch's journal, and you also get the manuscripts from my meditations, which I write. You have access to them, and as long as you credit me, you can absolutely use them in your own meditational practices with other people. I'm going to try and get a £1 a month level tier, a £1 a month tier, so I don't exclude anybody, so you can get the ad-free version and perhaps the write-ups if that interests you. Also, other ways, a few people have messaged me saying, I don't know how to rate you on Spotify. If you go to the page where all the episodes are listed on the app, you'll see the little cog, and next to the cog there's three little dots. You click on the dots and it'll say share, and then at the bottom I think it says rate this podcast, and then you tap that and then the stars come on and there you go. Bob's your uncle. Don't know who Bob is. It's a bit dodgy. Proper dodgy, that, innit? Currently we are cruising through the beautiful Sabbat of Astara, aka the spring equinox, where day and night are exactly equal in time to each other, which represents beautiful harmonic balance in life. It's all about spring cleaning, out with the old, in with the new, inspiration, things becoming alive, happiness and excitement for the future, transformation, coming together as a team, building a nest together like the birds are doing at the moment, growth that's been incubating, that's now sprouting out, ready to be seen by all. It's beautiful. Get painting those eggs. It's all about the pastel colours and those rabbits, going out like rabbits, thinking up new plans, rebirth, reform, transformation. It is such a beautiful, positive time in the wheel of the year. I won't say too much more. One day I'll probably dedicate a whole episode to a Sabbat, but that's probably not going to be for a while yet because I'm just having so much fun talking about random stuff in my life. Oh, here we go. Segue. Such as this amazing episode from my good friend Claire. I've known Claire for quite a long time, since I was a teenager. I met Claire and her mum on holiday in Loo in Cornwall. We had these little apartments next to each other, and we had a private beach as well, which was just beautiful. It was a funny holiday because it turns out that was going to be my mum's last holiday because she was ill then, but we didn't know it was serious. So she struggled through the holiday going to Land's End and trying to enjoy the beach and stuff, but she was really suffering. There were a mum and daughter duo next to us who I wanted to know because I was on my own with my mum and my mum's boyfriend, and I just needed some young company, really. So we made a connection and we'd go around each other's apartment and drink proper cloudy cider. And it turns out we were both from West Yorkshire, in the Leeds Bradford area. You know, we'd both been to similar places, we knew people from these places. We had a lot in common, which was astonishing considering we were down all the way in Land's End area.
I mean, what are the chances of that? Universe, I know it was you.
And so we promised we'd swap addresses and be in contact. And then a year or so passed and I got a random letter from Claire's mum. And it was just such good timing for me because I was very lost. And she sent me presents in the post that she'd made, like a little bracelet, a beaded bracelet. And it just really touched me. And so we got in contact and we've been friends ever since. And it is lovely to know Claire and her mum because they're my only friends I've got right now who met my mum, who knew who she was. Everybody else I met kind of after my mum passed. And Claire's the kind of friend I cannot see for a year, sometimes 2 years, which is terrible. But, you know, we'll message each other on WhatsApp going like, oh my gosh, time has passed. It's been a year, we should meet up. And then when we meet up, it's like, no time has passed at all. We're right where we left off. And thank goodness I have friends like this that are there when I need them, who don't hold anything against me in terms of being shoddy and distracted and busy, because kids and life and 21st century living, it's all very intense. It's beautiful to have a friend like that. And Claire's voice is really podcast worthy. She's a fantastic voice and she's so passionate about her chosen topic of mindfulness and her new business adventure, which is what this podcast episode is all about. So I hope you enjoy it and you get lots from it and it's beneficial to you. So yeah, without any further ado, let's press play on the old podcast episode. Enjoy. Welcome everybody to another amazing Moot to Loot. I've got my lovely friend Claire on today. Hello, Claire, you all right?
I'm all right, thank you. And you?
Yeah, good. Excited to have a friend on. She's come on to talk to us about this new endeavour you're going on, this new journey of recovery and helping people mindfully and well-being and stuff.
Well, to start with, I mean, you said about recovery, so maybe I'll start there. Yeah, so I've been through quite a bit recently, mainly down to COVID, which I know a lot of people have been through a lot with COVID. I don't think anybody is unaffected by what we went through. The first time I had COVID, I got long COVID. So I've ended up with my life basically completely changed. I don't know if your listeners will have come across anyone with long COVID before, but each person seems to be a little bit different depending on their symptoms. But generally, you all get fatigue, chronic fatigue, and some sort of pain depending on how COVID affected you and what maybe issues you had beforehand as well that have been exaggerated, I suppose, in your immune system. So I ended up having to leave my sorry, dog. Yeah, I ended up having to leave my previous career because I was not able to do it anymore, physically and mentally, really, because it was the mental fatigue as well as, you know, when people talk about chronic fatigue, I think most people think of physical fatigue and they don't necessarily recognize, unless they've been there or known someone with it, that actually it's a mental fatigue as much as it is physical. So trying to process information at the same rate as you did before, or having a conversation like we are now, is just not possible when you're first sort of learning how to cope with it all. And so I lost my job and hit rock bottom, really, to start with what was I going to do with my life? Where am I going next? And the one thing that really helped was coming back to mindfulness, which I've always, over the years, I've always gone back to mindfulness to some extent, for various reasons, you know, and reasonably regularly, but around, I suppose, just taking a moment for myself, or what people might see as a mindful moment, taking that kind of doing a short meditation or just stopping and trying to calm my mind. And I thought to myself, this has really helped, you know, even in those small amounts that I was doing, how can I use this and actually make it even more impactful to benefit myself initially, but then equally sort of as I started to get better with it and it was helping me, I thought, well, how can I offer this to others? Which is when I looked into the training, like you're saying, talking about my new venture. And yeah, so I've been doing mindfulness training. I can now teach mindfulness to people. I'm currently on the pathway to becoming a hypnopsychotherapist, which is mindfulness based as well. And I think that's important that mindfulness runs through the whole lot. Yeah, so that's me and where I'm at the moment. I'm not working yet, but I've had some volunteers, at such as yourself, to come along and be a case study for myself in my training. And I have offered sort of ad hoc support to people that I know or people that I've heard of that could do with the support, but on a voluntary basis, with hopefully looking to making this into a business where I can expand it and help more and more people as I go on, which I'm hoping is not so very far in the future now. I mean, it's been 3 years of long COVID so far, over 3 years. And the progress I've made is fantastic. I would never say it's gone. No, I shouldn't say I never say it's gone. Maybe one day I will. That would be lovely. But I can live with it now. That's the difference. And I can fit it into what you would normally see as an ordinary lifestyle, I suppose. Being able to actually do the washing, you know, bending down to the washing machine, the dishwasher, looking after the kids, and hopefully then bringing back in work as well as being able to have that family life.
It's amazing the power that the mind has. Just them few moments just to meditate, they can change your life if you just absolutely give them space and allow them to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the key, isn't it? Allowing it to be able to have that effect on you. And it's not, you know, some kind of magic. It's not magician there casting spells on you. It's not anything, you know, some people have these preconceptions as, well, what is mindfulness? And it's none of that. It is just your mind. It is allowing yourself to have that moment to let your subconscious do what it needs to do. You know, it's there to look after you as much as, sorry, I'm going off on a side tangent here, but I read a really interesting book called Mind. I'll find the proper title for you and let you know. It was fascinating because it talks about placebo effect and how historically, as a lot of people are aware of, you medical practitioners have seen psychology side of things or hypnotherapy and mindfulness and so on. I'm generalizing here. I'm sure it's not everybody, but has seen that it as this kind of fluffy add-on that, you know, yeah, it might make you feel a bit nice or make you calmer, but it's not really affecting your medical issues. Whereas actually, you know, this placebo effect research, that there's so much more than the book I'm talking about. But so historically, they'd looked at medical and physical issues and not affected, or, you know, only calmed. Maybe your mind can be calmed and that can help you calm down physically, I suppose. But they're more and more seeing the links now between physical and mental side of things and how your mind and your physical side are one and the same and absolutely interlinked and affect each other. And so, you know, that whole old wives' tale, if you want to see it that way, is the you know, having a positive mindset can make you feel better is absolutely true. You know, it's not a old wives' tale. Otherwise, why would a placebo effect work? You know, why could you take, you know, they talk about a lady who had really bad back problems, couldn't walk, and that she was accepted onto a trial, this is in America, to have an operation on her back. But what she knew before she went in that it was a trial, and the way they did that trial was some people got the operation, some people had everything to set them up for the operation and then came round thinking they'd had it but wouldn't necessarily be told that they hadn't had it. She eventually found out she was one of the people that hadn't had it, but she walked for years afterwards knowing that she was thinking she knew she'd had this operation. So how does that work if your mind doesn't affect your physical side? Does that make sense?
That's amazing. That's that is huge, isn't it?
Yeah, that's just one example, but you know, it makes such a difference. I mean, what I'm doing obviously is nothing quite as extreme as substituting operations, not at all. And I would never say that this substitutes medical intervention. You know, if you need medical support, then absolutely you need that as well. But it's part of the puzzle.
There's other ways, isn't there? There's not just, you know, Western medicine. There's like, we've got power inside us to actually heal from within.
Yeah.
If we learn different techniques and stuff. You're one of my longest friends. You've known me at my worst, haven't you, when I was really sad. And my mental health has been shoddy my whole life until this past 10 years when I started liking a certain lifestyle, you know, magic and witchcraft. I mean, you said it's not magic and I was a bit like, I beg to differ. It definitely is magic, but not the magic you're talking about.
No, absolutely. Yeah, no, I know what you mean there.
Yeah, so it does impact you just looking for little positives, tiny, tiny little positives, you know, giving them time and they eventually grow into bigger positives. And
even the tiniest, like you said, tiniest positive, or even if you can't find that, sometimes you can feel so low or so overwhelmed, maybe not low, but, you know, there's too much in your mind, that you just need to focus your mind for a minute or calm it down. One of the common misconceptions, I think, around mindfulness and meditation is that you can't let your mind wander. You know, people think, oh, well, I can't do meditation because my mind, you know, goes off and I'm trying to listen to this meditation or think about this one thing that I'm supposed to be thinking about. And my mind starts with this, you know, what am I having for dinner later? What have I got planned for tomorrow? Whatever, you know, and your thoughts creep back in. That's completely natural and absolutely fine. And in fact, the fact that you notice that your mind went there is mindfulness in itself. So I'm definitely an advocate for everyone can do meditation and mindfulness, that we need to get rid of that kind of stereotype. Mindfulness teachers and people who are good at mindfulness can concentrate their mind indefinitely. Does that make sense?
I think. Yeah. And like you say, people think meditating is laying down, spending half an hour to an hour chanting om and stuff. And it's like, it's not. It's just always being aware, stuff happening to you. Meditate in loads of different ways, can't you?
Yeah.
And what it Buddha that said, if you say you don't have time to meditate, it's them people that need to meditate the most.
Yeah, that's it. And I agree totally with that. And in fact, related to that, when I was teaching, when I first started teaching, and I don't know, anyone who's been in the teaching profession knows how ridiculous the workload is and how it is a vocation, not just your career, to the point where you don't switch off from it ever. Kind of, you know, you bring it home with you. You're thinking about, you know, this, I don't know, this child that needs this support or whatever it is that's going on in your mind. Or what am I doing for the lesson tomorrow? But the point there is that, like you say, is that if you are somebody saying, I haven't got time, then that you're the one that absolutely most needs it. An example of that, interestingly, was when I was training to be a teacher and I was in the middle of my training, sitting in this very room, actually, in my home office, working away, planning lessons, whatever I was doing. And my husband walked in. It was middle of the weekend. And he said, what are you doing? And I said, right, well, I'm planning this lesson and I'm doing that. And I'm grouping these kids so that I know that I need to support them for the next maths lesson, whatever. I'm planning. Da, 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 da. And he went, no, I mean, what are you doing? It's the weekend. The kids are here. You know, we're here to, you know, we can have a nice time together at the moment. We've got time to ourselves. You know, why are you still working, kind of thing? That's what he meant. And I went, well, because I can't not, you know, I can't leave it. And he actually was the, you know, the person that first said to me, that's the exact reason why you need to come away, you know, because actually when you come back to it with a fresh mind as well, you can see it so much more clearly and you've almost subconsciously chunked it into manageable work rather than this stupidly overwhelming. And that can apply to any job or any thing that you're planning in your mind, not just teaching. But yeah, if you feel you haven't got the time, then you absolutely are the one that needs it. But I think everybody needs it.
It should be taught in school, shouldn't it?
It should, absolutely.
You know, it's a big important thing. I think there'd be less depression less anxiety and all those neurodiverse problems that we suffer as children into adulthood. I think there'd be less of them if we got taught basic meditation life skill.
It is a life skill. That's what I was about to say. Actually, you took the words out of my mouth there. But yeah, so in terms of mindfulness, for anyone listening who doesn't particularly know what mindfulness is, mindfulness, I would say, is it's dependent on you and what works for you. Like, I've got a brother who says, you know, I don't do mindfulness, but actually he absolutely loves making up tunes on the keyboard and playing them to himself and just being in his own space in that way, it completely occupies his mind when he's doing it. And I'm like, well, that's your mindfulness. That's, you found your way to do that. And I think that's a misconception again, that you have to do it in a certain way. So mindfulness, this is one description of what it is, if it helps anybody. Mindfulness is fundamentally a way of learning how to be in the present. So remembering that we are called human beings, not human doings. Being in the present and bringing a sense of calm, or taking time away from that doing frame of mind, is mindfulness. And it shows you how to relax. It provides you with those techniques to achieve that relaxation. But more than that, it can also provide you helpful practice for you to be able to learn to manage issues like historical depression or stress or anxiousness or even pain. You know, I had so much pain in my chest with long COVID, but I could ease it, even if it was only momentarily, by focusing on that pain and letting it be rather than forcing it away. I don't know if that's making sense. I think I'd have to sort of go into that in more detail, you know, with people who it would support, but hopefully it does make some sort of sense. And it allows us those opportunities to achieve that change within our well-being and ultimately our outlook then on things being more positive and not as threatening as they were before. And actually, I had a quote. I was going to quote something from The Daily Trip that I listened to by a guy called Jeff Warren. And he says, meditation teaches us how to pay attention. And what do you want to fill your attention with in life? You can fill it with something stressful, or you can fill it with something peaceful. And you have the ability to choose. Nothing more is more important than that. And I absolutely agree in that sense that, yeah.
I do understand the pain thing. And I think a lot of people who get tattoos do this, because when you're getting a tattoo, it does hurt. But if you sit with the pain, you acknowledge the pain. I find long tattoos, you kind of go, they get really, really bad. And then it's like a wave, and then you accept the pain and it kind of like falls dramatically. And then it builds up again, kind of like a wave. I do try and meditate just with the pain, and you start an accepting of it creates a different mindset. But then, you know, like Shakti mats as well, I think behave similar ways, where you lay on all the needles and the first 3-4 minutes is just hell on earth. It really, really painful. But you accept the pain and you sit with the pain, and then something changes and your mind like goes click, and it's just amazing. And I could lay on it all day, you know, just so relaxed.
Yeah, I've never done that, but yeah, it's really interesting. That's exactly what I mean. It's that acceptance, which is one of the sort of fundamentals of mindfulness, is being able to accept what's around you and not just allow it to be. I remember when I told a friend of mine about this acceptance around my long COVID pain, and they reacted quite negatively, because they thought what I was saying is I'm going to allow it to be worse, or I'm going to never try and get rid of it. I'm just going to accept that I'll be ill forever, you know, that kind of thing. They thought that's what I was saying, and it wasn't at all. What I was saying is I'm going to stop fighting the situation I'm in and instead allow it to be, but then work out, okay, so this is where I'm actually at. Let myself be there. So where can I go from here? And just taking that moment to allow yourself to be where you are is the crux of it all, I think, isn't it? I think, does that make sense? Like you're saying with that map. Laying on that mat, you're to start with, you're fighting it, I suppose, in that instant of, this is not what I had in mind, or it's very different to how I felt just now. But then when you say, the tattoo example, saying, okay, so I'm gonna just allow it now, I'm just gonna be here, and I've gotten used to it, I suppose, by that point a bit more as well, and just accept that is the situation you're in. You're not fighting. I think that's the key, isn't it? If you're fighting something away, then all your attention is taken on that negativity of fighting or frustration or anger or whatever it is you're feeling in that moment, rather than looking at the, okay, I've accepted I'm here. That's actually an achievement, so I can be positive about that. So then you've cleared that space in your mind for any other opportunity that might come across that you could then do next.
And we're all brought up that pain is, you know, really bad and we should avoid pain at all costs. And it's like, I kind of challenge that a bit, like, but why? You know, it's all right to be a little bit uncomfortable, especially people who get tattoos. It's quite a spiritual thing for a lot of people, because you're choosing to accept this pain to get something out of it. It's not a good thing to be in loads and loads of pain that you can't move and you can't live your life, but it's probably all right. You know, think about what we're feeling, why we're feeling it.
Yeah, Absolutely, yeah. And actually, that ties in quite nicely to what I was going to say next, is about people may well have heard, if they know things about mindfulness and meditation, they may have heard of Jon Kabat-Zinn. He's one of the sort of historical gurus, I suppose, known as, you know, people refer to his teachings that help them learn mindfulness or how to teach mindfulness. And he talks about the 7 attitudes of mindfulness, which we've talked quite a lot about, that acceptance. But he talks about non-judgment. So you're being an impartial witness to what's going on, which is, you know, like I say, we've referred to pain here, but it could be anything that's going on in a situation in your life that you maybe were judging and weren't comfortable with. If you can take a stance of, I'm not judging this, instead I'm noticing it, and not reacting instantly to a negative, but rather going, okay, so I'm here, I can evaluate it. It's again, it's going back to that, not fighting. And the second one he talks about is patience, allowing things to unfold in their own time. And again, referring back to my long COVID there, that was a big thing for me, because nobody knows how long this lasts for, or if it finishes, or, you know, any of that. And I think a lot of people can relate to that in all sorts of potential illnesses they might have or situations they're in where you don't know, you know, there's no prediction as to how long it's going to be. And patience is a virtue, as they say there. It's one of your 7 attitudes to mindfulness. The one that I really love, actually, is beginner's mind. I'm going to ask you, actually, Emma, whether you have any idea what I mean by beginner's mind in terms of mindfulness. You didn't know you were going to be tested.
No, I feel like I should know. Beginner's mind. Is it accepting you don't know?
Yeah, yeah. It's along those lines, absolutely. And it's approaching something like you've never seen it before. So even if you've seen it day in, day out for years, just stopping for a minute and going, oh, okay, let's just approach it. A bit like you imagine a child seeing snow, I don't know, snow for the first time. The awe that you could have in that moment, rather than maybe as an adult, if we're using the metaphor of snow here, maybe looking out and thinking, oh no, I've got to wear my walking boots and I've got to, you know, get the car out and how on earth am I going to drive? And, you know, instead approaching it with a beginner's mind, going, right, this is amazing. Actually, this is different. This is, you know, what can I learn about this situation? Rather than going at it again in any sort of negative way, you're looking at it in a mindful beginner's mind, noticing that no moment is like any other. So like I said, you may have come across a situation time and time again, but it is true that nothing is ever exactly the same as it was the last time you experienced it. So you can have that beginner's mind even over something that you think you've seen time and time again. And then you get to see, and you're more receptive to any new possibilities that your negativity prevented you from seeing because you've got this beginner's mind. Does that make sense?
I love it. Yeah, yeah. It's lovely. It's a really nice way to try and look at stuff from a different perspective.
Yeah.
And I think we do get passionate, you know, when we find something we love and we learn lots about it because we have that beginner's mind. So therefore it's a really positive thing. But if we can apply that to like the mundane life. Mm. Would we feel that same passion as if we were learning something we want to learn?
Absolutely. Then the fourth attitude to mindfulness is trust.
I like this one.
Yeah. So developing trust in your feelings and yourself, but also trusting yourself and your basic wisdom as well. That's such an important aspect of being mindful. Going, okay, so, you know, not necessarily acting straight away on a gut instinct, but trusting that it's there for a reason, you know, that gut instinct and your thoughts that follow it. And letting yourself, you know, if you use all these attitudes at once, you're approaching it with that beginner's mind, you're approaching it, you know, with that non-judgment and that patience. So you can then trust that you can calculate a better way to approach the situation. So you like trust, you said, as one of the mindfulness attitudes. What do you want to say something about that?
I mean, a lot of what you're saying, it does really, really resonate with me through witchcraft, I think.
Okay.
And learning to be, like you say, patient and being all right with stuff and trusting the process and giving yourself credit. You know, why do I feel this way? It's because I've learned this and I've learned that. Okay, what am I going to do with it? And then there's the whole trust in the universe that not everybody's out to get you. You know, people are generally quite nice and caring. Being positive in it, looking on the glass half full rather than the glass half empty. But many things I say to myself is, I'm just going to trust this with the universe and that things are going to turn out all right. And that is such a high positive vibe. Whereas before, when you knew me before, I didn't have any of that. And I was just so controlling that, you know, I'd like
choke the situation to death because I just didn't trust. If I didn't control it, it'd just go wrong. You know, if it can go wrong, it will, which is a terrible saying.
Yeah, and you get that snowball effect, don't you, in your mind? Like, oh, but if that happens and this could happen and that could happen, and you almost, it's catastrophizing, isn't it, what you're doing there? And it's almost like you're making it feel like it's really happening now, when actually it's only potentials that are in your mind, you know, and you've not considered every potential outcome here. And that is, yeah, snowballing into the future rather than taking a moment in the present, which is where mindfulness can really help. The other thing here that's interesting is the last three attitudes to mindfulness, there's non-striving. Again, this is one that some people, particularly in organizations, companies, they don't like their employees being taught that non-striving is an attitude to mindfulness, because then they're going, well, hang on though, but we've got these goals and these, you know, projects that they're supposed to be achieving, and they need to strive for those goals. And but it's not saying that you can't be looking, you know, aiming for something. Absolutely not. What it's saying is you're remaining sort of unattached to that outcome or that achievement, to the point where you can undertake mindfulness practice with an intention of, how am I putting this? Simply doing it without an expectation. So it's not that you're not aiming to achieve something maybe by the end of it, but if you put those expectations on the current situation and go, it needs to go like this, a bit like you were just saying, that kind of, if it doesn't go like that, then this could happen and that could happen. Then you get into that snowballing of, but if it doesn't exactly happen that way that I'm hoping it will happen with that expectation, then the ultimate goal will not happen. So that's what they mean by non-striving.
Just capitalism just teaches it out of us.
And we talked about acceptance. That's number six on the list. I don't think these are in any particular order. You know, it's not like number one's the most important. It's not at all. They're all important. We talked about acceptance at the beginning, and that is key, you know. Acceptance is the willingness to see things as they really are. Okay, this is how it is. It doesn't mean that you have to accept it and be positive with it and satisfied that that is how it is, but it's also that you're not fighting it, so that all your energy is taken up on that. So instead, you're freeing your energy up to take appropriate action instead of working with that clouded denial or prejudice or fear. And then the last one, number seven, letting go. So letting go is a way of letting things be, accepting things as they are. There's that word accepting again. And when you observe your mind grasping or pushing something away, either pushing it away or not letting it go, very much so, kind of, I must keep focused on this thing because if I don't, something bad's going to happen. If you notice that, it's the idea of trying the opposite, holding on and seeing what it feels like to the opposite, if you can, or by looking at how you can learn to let go. I don't know if this is making sense. I feel like I'm babbling here.
No, it's good. It is really good, and it makes me so passionate.
It's something you do when you sleep, of course, letting go.
You've got no choice.
Yeah. If you're having trouble sleeping, it's because you're not letting go. Yeah, absolutely.
I always have trouble sleeping because I'm just so inspired at the moment. My sleep's taken a massive hit. Laid there with loads and loads of thoughts, you know, the ideas, and that's because I'm not winding down properly because I'm doing a lot of podcasting and witch work in the evenings, and I go on too long, and then it's midnight and it's like, oh, I should go to bed. So I'm lying there at two going like, I want to do this, I want to do that.
I've been there, absolutely. Have you tried like a body scan or something instead when you're in that moment?
I haven't, but I know of it. So
yeah. I've had some people say, you know, it's helped me now. And I had one person, in fact, with long COVID that I was helping with mindfulness. And she said, I listened to this at nighttime, which I'd never thought of doing. So she was the one that sort of got me into thinking that this is an option. And she said, because again, another preconception of mindfulness is, you can't fall asleep while you're doing a meditation, you know, then it won't work, or, you know, you're not doing it right. But you must get rid of that doing it right. There's no doing it right. You're doing it however works for you. And if at that point what you're needing is sleep and the meditation helps you sleep, then that's exactly what it should do. And she said it was just like, because her mind did the same thing, you know, spiraling into all these thoughts of, I don't think she was excited about the future possibilities like you were saying you are at the moment, which is awesome. But she was more, you know, spiraling over, you know, but what if I can't do this tomorrow? And what if I need to do that the next day? And so instead, it's a way of focusing your mind, but also the body scan, it also helps you relax each part of your body in turn. And it sort of resets that immune system and that central nervous system at the same time. So you can allow that sleep to come in on its own.
Isn't it interesting? Just like these two people have the same problem of falling asleep, but completely different reasons. Don't you think that's, you can be really positive and still have insomnia from, you know, your monkey brain. And then you can also have intrusive thoughts and lay there really worried, lowering your vibe. And I mean, I used to be that person, and we're making it sound easy, and it ain't easy, you know. It is, takes a lot of work and a lot of understanding of yourself.
Absolutely.
And your own
issues. It takes time, and it's allowing yourself and being kind to yourself in that whilst you're learning it, as to, like you say, it does take time. There's no right or wrong. Even if you just managed 2 minutes of something focused, and even if your mind wandered in those 2 minutes, that does not matter, as long as you are taking the time to try and get there and to give yourself that time of self-love and self-kindness. Yeah, it's not easy. Absolutely not. No. But once you've got into the habit of it, it's always there to fall back on and to use whenever you need. And I wouldn't, having practiced it for quite a long time myself now, years, and in the way that I'm doing it now, teaching mindfulness, I've been doing that for a long time now, and it's still at times not easy. You know, I don't think it necessarily ever becomes easy, but it's something that you can trust in your mind that it does work if you allow yourself that time. That's the difference, I think, to start with. You may not have that trust that it's going to be helpful or that you can even manage it. And it's finding ways that you can do it that enable you to have that trust that actually I can do it in this way that works for me. Like my example of my brother playing the keyboard, that works for him. Yes, he thinks he can't meditate. Fine. He doesn't have to, as long as the keyboard playing occupies his mind for a moment and takes him away from everything else that, you know, his mind was snowballing with, then that's perfect. That's what he needs. So it's finding your keyboard.
There's so many things.
Absolutely. I mean, your journaling, you talk about journaling. I know that I've heard it on your other podcasts as well. Absolutely. And anything like that, that just
for the beauty of it, just for the sheer joy, like do something just for the joy, not even the outcome. Journaling's great because some pages are just crap. Do you know, they look crap, but I still really like them because they did a job for me. They got me mindful in the present moment. They've got a story. Everything we do has a story behind it. So it's worth doing just for that. It's not the destination, it's the journey.
The journey.
Cheesy, but true.
Yeah. Learning to dance in the storm and all that. Now, I think whatever it is for you, maybe even, you know, if somebody has tried it before, you know, if your listeners, if there's anyone who's tried it before and thought, no, I still can't do it, you know, they're sitting there saying it's really easy. Well, not saying it's really easy, but we're saying it's something you can, you know, everybody can do it, everybody can find something. Maybe just stop with the focus on meditation or the focus on mindfulness itself and think, okay, so what do I actually really enjoy doing? What is something that maybe you haven't done it in a long time, maybe you did it when you were younger, I don't know, something that absolutely occupies your mind because you find it that enjoyable. It could be a walk, you know, walking outside in nature. A lot of people relate to that, don't they? Even just walking out, taking your time to look at what you're seeing around you, using your senses, you know, what can you smell, what can you hear? All of that is mindfulness. You know, you don't have to sit, like you said, you don't have to sit with your eyes closed somewhere and with your legs crossed and your hands in a certain position. That none of that is, there's no have to or should about it. It's what works for you.
Jogging.
Absolutely. Jogging.
I love jogging. I'm such a fan of jogging. It really is a meditation for me.
Yeah,
I absolutely adore jogging. And I used to be swimming as well before my gym membership lapsed. I used to swim, and that were a form of meditation, because there's good research, isn't there, to tell us that moving your body, like physically moving, any way, shape or form, will encourage your mind to be healthier and
absolutely
work better.
Yeah. And interestingly, so I had somebody that I worked with teaching mindfulness, and they enjoyed their walks but couldn't always manage it because of other issues that they had around tiredness or pain. But one thing they could do, they found, was they said, I really miss they were laughing at themselves as they said it. And I said, if it works for you, it's not silly at all. They said, I really miss washing up. I'm really tired, like when I stand and wash up now. But I used to find it time when I just didn't think of anything else. So just washing up. I was like, well, that's something that you can do, you know, bring a chair over, whatever it is that makes it easy for you to sit at the sink to do your washing up, whatever. But if that's something that works for you, you can find it wherever works for you.
Introducing the Jasper Cacao Project, your gateway to spiritual enlightenment through the power of cacao. This is a wholesome beverage that not only nourishes your body but also uplifts your soul. Jasper Cacao is ethically sourced, fairly traded, organically grown and crafted with love to bring you a truly transformative experience. Cacao, known as food of the gods, has been revered for centuries for its spiritual and healing properties. The Jasper Cacao Project honours this ancient tradition by offering you the purest form of cacao, free from additives and preservatives. Indulge in the rich beverages and feel the positive energy flow through you, whether you are looking to enhance your meditation practice, nourish your body with goodness, or simply savour a moment of bliss. The Cacao Project is here to accompany you on your spiritual journey. With every kilo sold, Jasper Cacao donate funds to the UK charity Plant Your Future, enabling farmers to sustainably grow their crops in the most eco-friendly way. Check out my bio for a discount on your first purchase, where you will receive 15% exclusive affiliate discount. Expanding love with every sip.
I'm just trying to think of examples for the listeners. You know, like you say, walking, we said jogging, we said it could be doing art, being creative, journaling. It could be some kind of arts or crafts, anything really, couldn't it? It could be washing up. It could be
the mundanest job ever.
Something that literally just occupies your mind, you know. It doesn't have to be something that excites you. I think that's why this guy, he was like, it's silly, you know, I'm laughing at it because it's silly that I find mindfulness within washing up. And I said, no, it doesn't have to be something that absolutely enthuses you, you know, that you go, oh my goodness, I'm so excited, I'm going to do some washing up tomorrow. You know, no, it's not. It's the fact that when he does it, that's all he thinks about, and he just finds it a stop in time, you know, for him to process and letting your subconscious do what it needs to do.
Driving's a bit like that for me as well. If I drive somewhere, you know, that I know the route off the top of my head, I'd have to think about it. Driving, automatic driving that you get to do is brilliant. I love that.
Yeah, and I don't know if you've heard of automatic thought in terms of mindfulness. So touched on it there in terms of driving can be one of the ones that's automatic thought, but automatic thoughts can be good, you know, particularly around driving. If you've been driving for long enough or had enough experience that you have an automatic thought to brake when you need to, you know, obviously that is a good thing. Some people think automatic thoughts are always negative, like coming across a situation that you've been in before, maybe historically, and it's been a negative outcome in the past. You then automatically think, you know, that it could be that same negative again. So you're approaching it in a negative way. But like I say, it can be, automatic thought can be a positive. And it's about looking at those and not going into autopilot. One of the sessions that I offer when I do teaching mindfulness, I do like an 8-session program of it. The first one is titled Waking Up. And it's sort of waking up from automatic pilot when it's not necessarily positive for you. So when we are fully engaged in any activity and giving it 100% attention, then it's likely that we are in what might be described as that flow state. And when we achieve this, sometimes it can feel as if life has slowed down and we're on automatic pilot. So activities requiring intense physical activity can be an example, like running or jogging, or an intense concentration will result in that similar flow or zone state, but in a positive way. So you're intentionally trying to get that automatic pilot in a good way. And you can achieve then that sense of blissful awareness, which I could see it in your face, Emma, when you were talking about journaling or jogging. You know, you get that blissful, you know, I love it. You can see it in your face. Your face lights up. A complete kind of exclusive focus, a sense of being at one with the universe. You're just there being, not human doing. Forgetting or having a release of unwanted thoughts, and that inner state of satisfaction. They're all reasons why waking up from automatic pilot or intentionally going into automatic pilot, but in a way that's going to work for you, is really important.
It's such a cool topic. It's witchcraft, I tell you. A lot of this stuff I've learned beginning to just look at stuff differently through very basic, simple rules of living and not causing harm to others and also yourself.
Yeah.
And this is why the overlap for me personally is just really massive.
Yeah, no, I see that.
Have you got that amazing poem about the wolf?
Oh.
I love a good poem, me. You know what I'm like?
Okay, whilst I'm trying to find that, I'm going to tell you a different one. Is that okay? She Let Go, written by Sapphire Rose. She let go without a thought or a word. She let go. She let go of the fear. She let go of the judgments. She let go of the confluence of opinions swarming around her head. She let go of the committee of indecision within her. She let go of all the right reasons. Wholly and completely, without hesitation or worry, she just let go. She didn't ask anyone for advice. She didn't read a book on how to let go. She didn't search the scriptures. She just let go. She let go of all the memories that held her back. She let go of all the anxiety that kept her from moving forwards. She let go of the planning and of all the calculations about how to do it just right. She didn't promise to let go. She didn't journal about it. She didn't write the projected date in her day timer or post it on Facebook. She made no public announcement and put no ad in the paper. She didn't check the weather report or read her daily horoscope. She just let go. She didn't analyse whether she should let go. She didn't call her friends to discuss the matter. She didn't do a five-step spiritual mind treatment. She didn't call the prayer line. She didn't utter one word. She just let go. No one was around when it happened. There was no applause or congratulations. No one thanked her or praised her. No one noticed a thing. Like a leaf falling from a tree, she just let go. There was no effort. There was no struggle. It wasn't good and it wasn't bad. It was what it was. And it is just that. In the space of letting go, she let it all be. A small smile came over her face. A light breeze blew through her hair. And the sun and the moon shone forevermore.
Oh, I've got goosebumps. Oh, I love it.
It is, isn't it? And just when you think it must be the end of the poem because you think, oh, that's really nice. That could end there. There's more.
The poem that keeps giving.
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard when I was jogging and I got covered in puddle. It was a story a few episodes ago.
Oh, yes.
I was just so cross about it. Like, I was reeling. I was absolutely reeling. And then the new me, the me that's happy in my head, was like, okay, now let it go. They obviously didn't see me. I could pinpoint the change in me, you know, like I would have stewed and been like, oh, that's just my life. People are just shit, you know. It's not true. It is not true. It's just a lie that we get fed. I'm always whinging about the capitalist society, you know, like work hard, have huge goals, make lots of money. Everybody's out to get you. Everybody's a bad wolf that's going to get you. And it's not the case.
No. And if one thing goes wrong, then it's going to spiral and you'll have a million things going wrong, like the mud from your puddle. Is then going to lead to something else and something else and something else. But actually, you know what? It's just a funny story to tell. And actually, you can laugh in that moment and go, oh, actually, that's quite amusing. Maybe you didn't feel that then. I'm not sure. You're looking at me like you didn't.
Took me a good 40 minutes to get past it. But then I carried on with my jog and I just noticed, because it were the beginning of February and all the little snowdrops had pushed through the hard mud, literally lifted. The hard mud out, and that was just like, wow, that's really nice to see, you know, and it's not all bad. And how amazing that these little teeny tiny seedlings do this every year.
Yeah,
the ground is rock hard and they still push through.
They still have that strength.
Thought that was quite a nice metaphor for I could go this way or I could go that way.
Absolutely. And just that moment where you go, oh, hang on, which way shall I go? Which way is going to be good at this moment? And those snowdrops, I always think whenever I see snowdrops, it's new beginnings. I love that.
It is, yeah.
In nature, but in the new beginnings in any way, shape or form, count it as something beneficial and hopeful for the future. Change is inevitable, isn't it? But that isn't a bad thing.
You sound like a witch there, Claire.
I do have a list of stuff that I offer. Did you want me to talk through that?
Yeah. Plug yourself.
Okay. So, like I say, I'm not currently working as such. I am doing voluntary and also taking people for case studies that can help with my portfolio, but also I can help them in return in the process. So it's a win-win. But I would love to know kind of if people are out there that are interested in trying any of the sessions in the hope that I can sort of start up, even if it's just starting up a shop, I suppose, waiting list for when I can start working and go, okay, actually, so these people were really interested in, for example, the 8-session program on mindfulness. That in itself, it's not therapy in any way. It's just me explaining what I know about mindfulness and exploring it. You can do it one-to-one or you can do it as a group, which there's benefits and drawbacks to both, depending on what works for you is the key. But exploring it together and going, okay, so what does that mean to you? You know, because like I say, there's no right or wrong. So I'm going to say things that I know about mindfulness. It might not be the way that the person I'm working with takes it, but that's the beauty of it. You take it in the way that works for you. So there's the 8-session program. I'm also hoping to offer a drop-in mindfulness that kind of keeps you ticking over, I suppose, week in, week out, with little inspirational poems like we've done, and just discussion or group activity or some guided meditation, just to have that go to. You know, sometimes you just need something in your mind that, oh, I've got that appointment or whatever, that, you know, when I was going to do that drop in. So even if you can't consciously stop yourself in your day-to-day life to do mindfulness on your own, you've got that to focus on that can help you. You know, you can put it in your calendar, kind of thing. And then, like I say, I've been training around hypnopsychotherapy, and that includes neurological linguistic programming, NLP, and Ericksonian techniques. And that can look around things like helping with phobias, helping with anxieties and fear. I mean, it helps with so much more than I'm saying here, but I don't want to list everything and bore everybody. Cognitive behavioral hypnotherapy as well. And a lot of people have heard of cognitive behavioral therapy. It's one of the ones that people go, ah, okay, yeah, I know what you're talking about now when they hear that mentioned. And that is, you know, that's beneficial for many different ways. But like I say, I try and do everything from, or I do everything from a mindfulness perspective. So it's not just cognitive behavioral therapy, it's hypnotherapy, and it's done from a mindfulness perspective. Then we've got solution focused hypnopsychotherapy. And that's actually really interesting. And it's around looking at how we can help with therapeutic techniques to sort of build that rapport within yourself as well. And it can be used particularly for people with chronic pain or psychosomatic kind of disorders where, you know, the mind is affecting the body in different ways. And like I say, that is in no way said in a belittling mind over body. It's not at all. I think both are completely interlinked. And I think helping one can help the other. And helping both is ideal. Yeah. And then I also, so my previous role was in special educational needs, working with young people and children, but I've also worked with adults, and that I specialize around dyslexia, ADHD, or any form of that, ADHD, ADD, autism, and developmental coordination disorder, or DCD, which a lot of people look at me like I'm speaking a different language when I say that. It's old school dyspraxia. A lot of people then go, ah, okay, yes, I know what you mean. I tend to steer away from the term dyspraxia because it used to have negative connotations around, you know, clumsy child syndrome. It's an awful thing that people used to call it. But it is developmental coordination disorder is what it's known by across the world. So I'm hoping to, I do work with people with this one-to-one at the moment in terms of voluntary and helping them with individual need. I'm also looking to develop some workshops around that. Anybody who's interested in something like that, it would be great to hear, you know, if there is interest out there, then, I know that it's worthwhile sort of putting the time into that and delivering a workshop around that. I actually need someone to volunteer at some point for a case study for the solution-focused psychohypnotherapy. So, you know, anybody who's got maybe a chronic pain condition like IBS, or, you know, there's all sorts out there that you might, you know, be struggling with, or that psychosomatic kind of disorder, anything like that, you know, that you're thinking I could really do with some help with. As you know, Emma, it's done totally free. It's to help me with my case study and to build my portfolio. So obviously I am in training and I want people to be aware of that. It's not that I'm qualified yet, but at the same time, I'm hoping, you know, you'll really get some benefit from it as well.
This is online, is it? It'd be online.
It could be, yes, it can be online. Or
either.
Yeah,
but either.
It can be either, yeah. So, yeah, being online, I mean, that lends itself so much more to, you know, if people are further afield, that's not a problem. We can do it online. Yeah, I offer both. So whichever, in person or online, it works either way. Cool. The other thing I didn't mention, and I've, as you know, Emma, I do EFT, which is known as tapping, and that really helps with kind of just centering for a moment or focusing on a particular issue. And the other thing that I am training in, which I'm really excited about because I've been reading all about it, is EMDR. I don't know if you've heard of EMDR.
No.
So EMDR is actually eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. A bit like in EFT, as you know, Emma, at the end of this, at the end of the process of EFT, we use an eye movement. It's a similar idea that eye movements can reset processes or thoughts within the mind. It's so interesting, and nobody quite knows why it works, but it does, because there's been so many people benefited from using EMDR. And it's literally talking about an issue. So it is a form of therapy, this one, talking about an issue and then using certain eye movements that I would direct the person through to process that, it's allowing their mind to process it and giving it that moment. And it's mindful in the way that you're focusing on something. I could go on forever.
And that's what I love. That's what I love about you. And me and Claire did some case study stuff together around mindful eating, because I'm quite bad at eating, you know, mindlessly and just wanting stuff for the taste. And it is working. I am losing a tiny bit of weight, which is not what it's about, but I'm making better choices and I'm not so bothered about certain things anymore. Still, I still love fajitas, and I still love eating on the fajitas because that's like my main thing. But I'm not snacking much in the evening anymore. Before I forget, how do people connect to you? Have you got an email address?
It's acaciamindfulnesshub@hotmail.com. So acacia is the type of tree, A-C-I-A, acacia. Mindfulnesshub, all one word, at hotmail.com.
Yeah, I'll link that in the notes as well so people can email Claire. She's actively looking for people to work with.
Absolutely.
Right now. Yeah. It's been absolutely brilliant to have you on, and I knew it would be because you're a good friend and you're so good at this, and even like the way you speak is really relaxing. I love it. Before we leave, would you be able to share something for the listeners to benefit from right now whilst listening to this podcast that we can finish on?
Oh, interesting. Like a short guided something? Is that what you're thinking?
I put you on the spot now.
That's fine. I did have something ready. Here we go. I'm going to do, it's very short, this one. And if people are interested in doing the 8-session program with me in mindfulness, they can do this, but we'll go into much more detail over the sessions. But this is a taste and something that you can do now, which will be really helpful. So we're going to just do a short sitting meditation, and we're going to focus on the breath, which a lot of people I know, if they've come across mindfulness, they'll know breath is often used as an anchor. If breath, I will say beforehand, if using your breath is something that bothers you and doesn't work for you because of breathing issues or, you know, for any reason it's not comfortable for you, then please find a different anchor. So it could be, instead of your breath, it could be a noise that you can hear around you. It could be a ticking of something. It could be, instead of closing your eyes here, you could just gaze and ease your focus on a certain object in front of you, whatever works for you, just to focus your mind on that for a moment and use it as an anchor, just to drop that anchor and be in the here and now. Choose a comfortable sitting position, which is reasonably upright, but also extremely comfortable. And if any point you need to move to make yourself more comfortable, that's absolutely fine. There's no right or wrong here. And remember that in meditation, we are paying attention on purpose in a particular kind of way and trying to fall awake rather than fall asleep. We are endeavouring to adopt an attitude of open acceptance and to be as non-judgmental as possible. Do try and remember that this really is a special time just for you. Start to notice your breathing, or whatever anchor works for you here. Just noticing it. It's not something that we would ordinarily be aware of, unless someone draws our attention to it. If you are focusing on your breathing, can you notice where is the sensation of breathing most noticeable for you? It might be around your nostrils as the cold air enters and you breathe in, and that warm air leaves you as you breathe out. It might be that you're noticing your chest movement, or perhaps lower down in your abdomen, where you notice a gentle feeling of expansion of your abdomen as you breathe in, and a contraction as you breathe out. If you're focusing on a sound or an object instead, you're just noticing that now. Noticing something again that you wouldn't ordinarily be aware of. But you've drawn your attention to it. Maybe observing how it makes you feel to look or hear it. Just taking a moment now with whatever anchor you have to focus and just notice. Not trying to change it in any way. And once you've identified the thing that you notice about it the most, if it's your breathing, you notice where you're feeling it the most, or where the movement is. Noticing every in and out breath. It will, of course, be quite natural for your attention to wander away as you're doing this, and you may find yourself being aware of something completely different to the anchor that you were trying to concentrate on. And that's fine. That's absolutely fine. Just acknowledge and label this altered awareness as whatever it is, accepting that it is also part of your mindful awareness, and then gently leading yourself back to your anchor. It doesn't matter if your awareness wanders away once, twice, or 1,000 times. Just lead it gently back to that anchor. Just noticing it is awareness and mindfulness in itself. And when you're ready, just bringing yourself back to the room around you, maybe noticing what you can hear or see or smell. Be having a wiggle of your fingers or toes, or having a stretch if that's what you need. I'm just trying to bring back with you that sense of calm and focus that you had during that little practice. Expand into the day that you still got ahead of you. Thank you for joining in.
Oh, lovely. Thank you for that, Claire.
That's okay. Everybody's very welcome. No, I love it. I love doing it. And I hope that comes through, because I think that's the point, isn't it? That you're enjoying what you're doing. Other people can take that same enjoyment from doing it. I'd love to do it more with people. So if you're interested, please let me know.
You have been listening to the Bellwitch podcast, Witching in the 21st Century, written and produced by me, Swales, a friendly green witch. Official podcast photographer is Beverly Thornton. Music by Jeff Harvey of Pixabay, made on WavePad Master and distributed via Zencaster. Want to come and guest on the show or got a topic you'd like me to cover? Email me at thebellwitchpodcast@yahoo.com. If you're enjoying the show, please leave me a review. Thank you for listening and stay magical, witches!